Hello and welcome to Booktopia You're On. I'm Bronwyn.
I'm John.
I'm Sarah.
And today we're talking about heroes in books. So, pretty simple question. What is a hero? And like, you know, in literature, what are the types of heroes that we're seeing? And
it is an interesting question because I guess when I've been thinking about this podcast, I've just been thinking of heroes in terms of the hero of the story. So basically the protagonist, which means they can be anyone.
They don't have to be Superman. You know, they can be any kind of hero. And everybody has a different idea of what is a hero to them as well. So it's quite interesting. When you read a book, you might think someone's a hero, but someone else might not think that person is heroic at all.
Very true. It
depends on your values.
So the good guy?
I guess the good guy. The one that you sympathise with, regardless of what their character may be.
So maybe if they're slightly more of a toxic character, but maybe there's something in them that you see that, you know, you think they're strong for pushing through the pain and still working.
So we, like, the original idea of heroic is kind of virtuous, brave, courageous.
That's a type of hero, I think, that we need more of. Like, not in a... I don't actually think there are all that many books at the moment, or it's not that common to find a protagonist who's like a moral compass, because we like... We gravitate towards more morally grey people when we like anti-heroes.
Well,
and
because
we like
it's more realistic.
People to be complicated, yeah.
Because, I mean, how many Supermans do you know?
And it seems unrealistic to have these really moral, shining light heroes. And also there's the terms like Mary Sue and stuff. We don't like it when they're perfect. But also, I love Jane Eyre, for example, and I think she's one of those quietly strong, moral compass type heroes who's really, she doesn't have very many grey areas. She's got Anne Elliot is another one. If you ignore the existence of Ghost at a Watchman or just decide that it's a separate alternate universe, Atticus Finch is one of them.
Yes.
I think there are lots of them in Dickens. As I think Nicholas Nickleby is one of them. But I was struggling when I was making my list to think of a recently written book that just has one of those shining light heroes who's like just 100% always right.
Forrest Gump.
Okay.
Would we call that but recent, it, though?
But,
like,
but doesn't that kind of... Because isn't it a critique of heroes? Because Forrest is has a low IQ... is seen as simple and godlike almost, or childlike.
So the suggestion would be you have to have a childlike view to be that uncomplicated and...
Dostoevsky's book, The Idiot, is around a guy who is... Imagine if Jesus walked into your drawing room, how would he seem to society? He'd be like an idiot. He's just too good.
Yeah, actually, that would be...
I think it's sad. And also, I think it's more the case with male heroes than female. I think if you're a young woman, there are way more examples of literary heroes and even in film and TV that are female that are
pure.
Good and pure of thought and like morally reliable. You can count on them to do the right thing. There aren't that many men, and in fact the literary heroes that we love, like the Mr. Darcy's and the Mr. Rochester's, and they're all kind of douchebags. Like, you love them, but they're the bad boys, or they're the ones that get fixed by a nice moral woman, like that kind of thing. What do you think of that, John, as the only man in the room? Do you are you longing for like an uncomplicated moral compass?
Am I longing for one?
Yeah, or do you
not
want one?
Because I have no direction in life. I need to.
No, do you feel as a male reader that there aren't that many? Or did you feel growing up that there weren't that many?
We always had Superman, and Superman was always that one.
That's true. Yeah, that we've just, only just really got Wonder Woman.
Yeah, and she's pure too. She has.
Yeah.
And yeah, in all those kind of comics and those, and it is the bad guy goes, why would you be so silly and be good? You know, it's that kind of...
It's more fun to be bad, that kind of...
Yeah, it's a naivety that's... You know, like when we talk about Mansfield Park and how attractive the Crawfords are because everyone else is so bloody good.
Yeah.
Just give me someone broken. it gets me more in interest in the story.
Old-fashioned heroes are boring, we're deciding.
Well,
I disagree, and this is something that a lot of people argue in regards to, say, Superman, because he's my favourite superhero. And so many people go, oh, but he's so vanilla, he's so boring, he's too good at everything. There's no interest, there's no layers, unlike someone like Batman, right? But I think he's fascinating because he's an orphan. He's a loss of his kind. He's really, really alone and really damaged. Like, I personally think he has a lot of layers.
Well, I like Henry Cavill a lot more than I like Ben Affleck.
Okay, we're not talking about the actors? Like,
yeah, but, I mean, that's where I'm sitting here listening to you going, yeah, Superman's so much better. I 100% agree. And I'm like, why do I feel that way? It's because of Henry Cavill.
What's wrong with Ben Affleck? Anyway.
He's just no Henry Cavill. That's all I'm saying. And also, Batman needs a lot of therapy.
He really does.
When I remember reading this book that was... It claims to be the first novel, but sort of taking the place of Cervantes. But it's about this hero. It's kind of like the turning point between the medieval and the Renaissance. Huh. And in the medieval period, there's all these heroes, the heroes that we, you know, are sort of having a go at. These kind of perfect beings that go off on quests and win, kill dragons and crap. Anyway, so Tyrant LeBlanc, by a Catalan author, is this guy. And in fact, he... In the middle of his story, he dies and rises again.
Wow.
He's a knight. He's a knight in shining armor. Yes.
Okay.
And he saves Constantinople from the Turks, even though it was written 20, 30 years after the Turks took Constantinople. So he was like this great superhero. But within the same period, we have Cervantes writing Don Quixote, and the hero being this deluded madman walking around Spain. Tilting at windmills, already they're turning the whole idea of this
on its head.
Yeah, this perfect being on its head. I mean, I don't think readers, you can only cope with perfection for so long.
To such an extent. It also depends on who surrounds your perfect hero and what challenges they face and stuff. If it's super easy for them to walk into every situation and just fix it, I don't know.
Well, that's one of the difficulties with the Superman character is.
You know he'll never die.
He is so bloody perfect. Like, what? Yeah. We know that for a certain period of time he may have a bit of a setback, but...
He's always going to come good. But that's true of... I mean, not really these days, but the stereotypical comic books where it's...
No, but if you're talking about detective novels, generally you have a good sense that things are going to work out well from the...
That's true. Even things like crime shows, you know, or crime books, you know that they'll get the bad guy in the end. Because the hero prevails, you know, your protagonist.
And you kind of want your money back if you don't.
Oh, but I don't know. I've read a book recently where the bad guy got away with it.
What was it?
I'm not going to say it because it'll spoil it for the listeners.
We'll talk after this podcast.
We will. And and the main character actually dies, and I loved it.
You do have a dark streak in you.
It was just because it's not common. And I loved watching my hero the whole time, being like championing, yes, go, go, go. And then, oh, you failed, okay.
I'd be very upset.
I was, but in a great way. Like, I just thought that's because sometimes in real life, the hero loses.
Which is true, but when you are reading genre fiction that
has expectations.
Rules, yeah, it's like you sign a contract with the author and you're like, okay,
you're paying out your money for a certain result.
Yeah, I expect to have some resolution in
it. I don't know, but I liked it personally. I just thought, I was like, oh, did not see that coming. Well done, author.
All right, yeah, well, I'll be reading that book soon.
But I've just spoiled it for you, though.
I don't believe in spoilers. We've had this discussion many times.
I just don't get it.
When we started talking about this podcast, we talked about the anti-hero, and they're my favourite.
So you like the anti-hero. I mean, they're great. They're great. Who's your favourite?
Why is anti-hero your favourite? I mean, look, I have a little soft spot for the anti-hero. Don't get me wrong. But why is it that you like
it? I just find I love the... Because generally the best ones are as they become their... Like it's a story of their becoming bad. Or they're becoming themselves. Like with The Talented Mr. Ripley. It is... The story is brilliant because he doesn't really, as a young man, doesn't really know why he's doing these things. Doesn't really know himself very well, and the novel just he gets to know himself as it goes through. Becky Sharp in Vanity Fair, you know, she has this sort of progression into, and we watch her become this horrible person.
You've got a smile on your face. I'm a little disturbed.
Look, and Scarlett O'Hara as well, as much as you bemoan the book at large. Yeah, like, the character is great. I also had Raskolnikov written down.
Yes. Holy crap. When you pretty much meet him when he kills somebody, and then you're going, yeah, but dude, keep going.
We like to delve into those. And look, we did the villains Dexter. Podcast a while ago. Dexter for sure. But Dexter, see, there's anti-heroes and then there's anti-heroes. So we could actually talk about Patrick Bateman from American Psycho in this podcast as an anti-hero. We also spoke about him as a villain in the villains podcast.
Yeah,
I reckon there's an anti-hero that's like, we're just going to deep dive into some evil and just see how fascinating and compelling it is. But then there's also the anti-hero who's like doing bad things and maybe a bit some selfish motives and maybe a little bit of like...
There are definitely levels. Yeah. There's
Loki. I mean, you've got your Loki apologist. Why do I relate everything to comic book movies?
I don't know, but I... See, Loki was the first anti-hero that I thought of that I actually love. I'm way more Team Loki than Team Thor. You know, but then if you actually met someone like that, he kills
terrible.
People. You wouldn't
But they're the type of anti-hero that you know they're bad and you know they're going to do the thing...
That's bad.
That they get personal gain from.
Yes.
But when push comes to shove and it's like fate of the world in
or
hangs in the balance.
Fate of your brother or something.
They'll come good, right? Because they're not totally evil.
That's
Patrick Bateman wouldn't. Patrick Bateman's going to kill you.
No, that's the anti-hero I like. The ones that you know when push comes to shove, they'll do the right thing.
So you like the soft anti-hero.
I like the bad boy kind of mentality.
Yeah, which comes down to our whole thing of like heroes. If you had a list, if you could list down all your male literary heroes and all your female literary heroes, I honestly believe most of the men would be bad boys.
Heathcliff.
Such a bad boy.
Plus, I think lots of people would have Heathcliff on their list, and I don't think many people would have Kathy on their list.
No.
Because we love Heathcliff. Kathy's like psycho. So is Heathcliff. But I mean, we're more forgiving of him, I think, because we like the bad boy.
But we don't like the bad girl as much.
We expect our women to be more heroic and moral than...
Yeah,
but
definitely.
We'll love our men despite it. Like, we'll even love them more for being a bit evil.
I know.
Well, what about people like Sherlock Holmes? Those kind of...
So, yeah. The crime solver here I had a whole, like, thing about. So, I reckon there you've got all different types as well. So, it's a broad thing. You know, you can have your hard-boiled detective, like, in... noir, like,
yep.
Kind of one.
Raymond Chandler sort of stuff.
Yeah. And or you could have your, like, quirky, eccentric, sort of outsider, like Hercule Poirot, or your unexpected amateur sleuth, like Miss Marple. There's all different types. I love them all. I honestly do.
Yeah.
I love them all. I love a crime-solving hero because I feel like there's something pure in it, like we were discussing before. They're gonna get the bad guy.
So that is that where the medieval heroes ended up, you know, like they go out and solve
maybe.
Problems. Yeah. It's that archetype.
Yeah, maybe, but there's less kind of you know, a lot of the types of crime solver don't really get covered in glory at the end. They just sort of push on to the next case, getting more and more bitter and weather beaten as they go. Whereas
unlike Sherlock Holmes, he just says, I don't need it. Thank you very much. The detective can have all the glory in this one. I've solved it for him.
Well, he's a whole other type. I think I called his type I don't even have him written down. He's just like the genius mastermind crime solver.
He does have his problems. He has a cocaine habit. Yeah, there's a few things going on there.
They just make him more glamorous and eccentric. But, you know, and Sherlock Holmes is a character, I think, as well. Like, it's been a while since I've read any of the Sherlock Holmes stories, but I feel like the legend of him has been built up so much in other adaptations that we all have a really deep understanding of who Sherlock Holmes is that may not even be in the original text.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so I was looking up sort of lists of types of heroes, Googling before, and the sort of very generic ones, and I reckon he would fall into what I found was the epic hero, and it's sort of when they become like a legend, because they stand out amongst ordinary people, which is what he is. And that, I mean, I've never read Sherlock Holmes. I don't even watch Sherlock Holmes, and yet I
know
who he is, and I know what he's about. And I probably couldn't. I don't know if you tried to describe him, I might have a bit of trouble really pinpointing aspects of his personality. But I could just say things like he's a genius, and he's, you know, really quirky, and he's really socially awkward and all those kinds of
characters
things.
That are like larger than life, even if they're not, you know, battling monsters in a kind of Odysseus style fashion. They are, you could still describe them as epic heroes because epic in scale.
There was the Hound, you know, the Baskervilles.
Oh yeah,
pretty scary. one that comes up and will be short if we don't mention it is Frodo Baggins, that kind of character where
The unwilling hero.
Yeah.
You know.
And the one that you would never suspect of being a hero, the unlikely hero.
But he's been pure.
Pure, yeah, that is true.
Because my favourite, just bringing up Lord of the Rings, my favourite type of hero, I was thinking about it, And I thought about what are some of the my favorite characters of all times, and I listed them and I thought, what do they all have in common? And I realized my favorite type is
questers.
No, the loyal best friend.
And
I would call that a type of hero, and I don't know what it is about the loyal best friend that I really respond to, but like Samwise Gamgee, Frodo's right-hand man, and he is so loyal throughout the whole thing, and I think that he is a hero of Lord of the Rings.
So the hero's on the sidelines.
Yeah, and I started thinking of some other ones, like Tinkerbell in Peter Pan. I mean, she's a little delinquent, don't get me wrong, but she's she's loyal to Peter. When everybody else abandons him, she does it.
Well, and Peter's a trickster hero. I like there's, you could say, yeah, you could even say Odysseus is a trickster hero because he went all across the place, like tricking and thieving his way through to, you know, I'm also had written down Puck as that trickster hero. And I guess Loki would fit in there as well.
Would we call him a hero? Would you call Puck a hero?
No, more or less so than Samwise Gamgee. Like,
true, but Puck is, like, Sam is not a trickster.
He's not a villain. I wouldn't say he's a villain.
Oh yeah, trickster is definitely the word I'd use. I would never call him a villain, but I wouldn't think he was good per se.
I think it's a type of hero, and also the outlaw hero, like the Sherlock. I want to say Sherwood Forest. Who am I thinking of?
Robin Hood.
Thank
Robin
you.
The guy that lives in the forest, right?
So that dude. It's a Batman one.
Yeah, Batman. Yeah. Like,
actually, do love those kinds of heroes. Mm. There's something intriguing about them.
Doing a bad thing for the right reason.
Yes, exactly.
Can I bring up what I ask you when we first talked about it was hero heroine. We haven't, are we calling it hero? We're just saying that that's just, it's not a gender specific.
I think it's
term.
Become like actor actress for me. I wouldn't necessarily, unless I was talking about a romance and I was trying to distinguish the hero from the heroine, I would just call a female hero a hero.
Yeah, if I could say, you know, Drew Barrymore is one of my favorite actors, and I wouldn't. Because that's true.
Yeah,
I wouldn't,
I think
then
heroine
say,
is a word that's kind of falling away a little bit. Do you agree?
Yeah. It was interesting. When you both said that, I started to Google it, and there's all these people sort of having discussions about it.
Yeah.
Far more than I would have thought.
Like, for example, the Wonder Woman movie, you would say that she's a hero. You wouldn't. I haven't heard her described as a heroine.
No, you're right.
And heroine is a word that I really associate with a damsel in distress.
Yes. Or like a very sort of dainty, soft sort of, hero of the story.
Yeah, I feel like picture a swooning, like bodice busting.
Or like any of the rom-coms out there, she would be your heroine.
Yeah, or a silent movie heroine who would be tied to the train tracks while some twirling moustache villain was like.
Yeah,
I just think it's an outdated word, and we probably don't need it. But unless it is like that, you've got two, like, hero characters, and one is female and one is male, you might use them just to distinguish. But I don't know, I say let's scrap it.
One that I forgot to mention before, when we're talking about the kind of the bad guy, the anti-hero, the Count of Monte Cristo. Have you ever read that?
The vengeful hero.
Yeah,
hero. And you've got male and female examples of that. Like, I felt the Count of Monte Cristo is an epic one.
I have not read it.
Oh, but
Bron, you would love
this movie. Yeah.
It would tick all of your boxes.
Doesn't matter. It just,
but it's been a long
basically
time.
Basically, he's done wrong by, and then he plans the most epic revenge ever. It is on the grandest scale possible.
That sounds good.
And
it reminds me of, and I actually don't know if this is a book or not, but The Mask of Zorro. Is that kind of a similar? Like, he is the vengeful hero.
Yeah, but this is
but even grander.
It's huge. Like, he invents a whole new personality and comes back into the lives of the people who did him wrong and just rains havoc on it. And it's so organized and so you know, and you don't know the plan as a reader, right? But you just get to see it unfold in this amazing way.
Great.
It's really good. And it also kind of reminds me of the Elizabeth Salander. Like, she's kind of a vengeful female. Like, they've got a mission, they've got people to take down, and
so when, like, they do bad things often, or they do things that
they're anti-heroes as well.
Yeah, so I mean, when do we stop forgiving them for it because they have a reason for it? Like Elizabeth said,
there'll usually be a point where they realize that
they're gone too far, and then they better stop because then they become the person that they're fighting. It's that dilemma, and that is the dilemma.
What's the name of the young girl, the sword fighting girl, in George Martin's?
Arya Stark.
Yeah, so she's like that. She sort of learns she all
is.
These new mm-hmm. skills
she's
and has this
list.
I think yeah. she's batshit crazy.
But why do you think that? Would you think that if it was a little boy?
No. Yes, I would. I would think the same thing because it's just like, I think it has maybe more to do with the age. It was really quite confronting. And she's killing all these people. And
but she was at the Red Wedding.
I know. Like was she at the Red Wedding?
She didn't yeah. see it happen, but she was right outside.
Oh,
like,
she was too.
Yeah.
Yes. I don't know. I get it. I get her reasons for what she's doing, but at the same time, I think, oh, you're taking it too far. Like, and I feel the same about Daenerys Targaryen. I think she's also batshit crazy.
I strongly disagree with you. I would say, vehemently disagree. I would
we'll
say
take
they,
this outside.
Yeah.
I think they have their moments. They're definitely not. Jon Snow would be our Atticus Finch of the thing.
He's
the moral compass.
Vanilla, yeah.
Never really done anything that I can remember from the book, certainly not from the show,
no.
that made you question where his heart was. He's stayed true and pure hero.
Mm.
Characters like Daenerys and Arya maybe haven't. They've teetered. But I feel like both of them are on a journey that will end heroically. Like, I don't think they're...
Oh, I agree.
Yeah.
I think that they're tumbling through the dark at the moment. They're not really sure. So they're sort of just taking it as it comes, and they make mistakes, and then they have triumphs, and that's great. But I do think, yes, they'll end...
I
mean, the dialogue
sometimes,
well.
But she's a Stark in the end of the day. And
whereas yeah, there are people, there are other characters in that book, like what's his face? My
Tyrion's
favorite,
a great anti-hero.
My favorite character is Tyrion, but at the same time, I still think he is crazy at times. They're all, I mean, this is the point. Everyone in that story is.
That's
crazy.
Why that show's interesting.
Exactly.
They're all damaged. They're all got something.
I love when everybody's damaged. And again, this is not a book, but the show Battlestar Galactica.
I'd read books if they made that.
I wish they would. It would be great. But everybody in that is messed up.
Yeah.
Everybody's so flawed.
When you have a central Oof. Conflict that is
so
tied up in humanity, it's always going to be very lots of grey areas and lots of questionable motives clashing. I mean, I love that stuff. That's why we like anti-heroes.
Mm. Well, yeah. we've got people like James Bond and Jack Reacher and these kind of...
There are willing heroes.
I
right?
had
so.
Them listed in my kind of crime solvers as...
Unborn.
What did I call them? Like dangerous saviors.
Dangerous saviors.
Dangerous?
You're pointing this stuff.
But is James Bond dangerous because, you know...
He's got a license to kill.
No. I meant because, you know, of his philandering with women, he's dangerous.
No,
you know,
I was meaning more
sense.
Like that they're actually dangerous, like they're killers.
Oh,
and like Jack Reacher is this kind of wandering gypsy that also can kill everyone and take care of business. Like, it's kind of, yeah, like he's kind of like a wandering dangerous savior, and because he's sort of not working for anyone. James Bond is like
James
an agent.
Just kind of disarming that, you know, he walks in his crisp suit and orders his martini or whatever he drinks, and so you think, oh, he's not that dangerous. Like, if you saw him, you might just think, oh, a gentleman, but then he could destroy you.
So dashing.
And he's always meant to be, like, the whole idea is he's working for the right guys, I mean.
Yeah.
Being the British.
But
he's
then
definitely
he's
not
black,
a rogue. Like, he goes rogue.
He's the black
he's,
sheep, though, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Like, he's the golden boy, but he's also the black sheep because he does bad things sometimes, or you do questionable things and you cringe and you go, oh, no.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
I do like those.
So, can we just... Because there has been a craze within YA of resurrecting the kick-ass heroine.
Oh, yeah.
And what do you think of that? Because it's kind of aping the kind of man that we're kind of moving away from.
I feel like sometimes it's, and this is going to be a difficult discussion to have if we can't call out examples, but like I feel as though it's great because, you know, there was maybe a bit of a dearth for a long time, and so it's obviously good to have strong role models for young readers, but I feel like there's sometimes a difference between a strong role model and a main character who's a woman who has a sword. Like, I just feel like you've got to back it up with the decisions. Like, if you're going to try and make a strong role model in a book aimed for young readers, which is so important, their actions, their motives, their whole agency within the book has to be strong. It can't just be that they have
strength,
the trappings of strength.
Strength, to me, has nothing to do with physical strength and, how badass you are with a sword or...
They can go hand
stuff.
In hand.
I think that's great.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a huge supporter of all that. I love a kick-ass female character, but I would, you know, you could have a female character who is badass like that, but she is very, very weak.
I agree, and I think the weakness isn't necessarily... I'm not saying they all have to be moral pattern cards and always do the right thing.
No, not that.
Not by any
strong.
Means. They can make mistakes. They can have questionable morals. They can be anti-heroes. All I'm saying is they need to have agency within their own story. They can't just be reacting to love interests all the time. They can't just be, like,
yes.
you know, sort of sidelined in their own story.
Which, yeah, it does happen.
It does.
Yeah.
But, you know, for everyone like that, there's so many shiny examples of amazing female protagonists.
Name a few.
Oh, I all of the ones that... See, my brain immediately goes to the ones that I connected with growing up, but there's so many examples now. Like, I think Leigh Bardugo is amazing at writing strong female characters. I think Amy Kaufman and Meg Spooner and Jay Kristoff are all amazing at it.
True.
I read a really good one just recently called Bring Me Their Hearts by Sarah Wolf.
Mm-hmm.
Good one. She had a really feisty, really kick-ass main character who had all of the trappings and the assassining and everything, but she was in control of her own story. She wasn't reacting. You know, you can have a character who has a romantic subplot but isn't a slave to it. You know, like, that's what that's what I just don't want. You just want young girls to have examples that they can point to, like, this is such a generalization, and for everything you say, there's a million examples that prove it wrong. But but young boys, right, grow up with all these examples of heroes, and the heroes, many of them
Halloween.
Are as bad. Yeah, I'm not saying it's only female characters that that get miswritten, because there's a million examples of male heroes who, like, you know that thing fridging? So, like, they have a romantic subplot, but they really just have a romantic subplot so the woman can get killed, and that motivates the man throughout the whole rest of the story, right? And that's also bad. Like, you want to have a motivation besides my girlfriend got killed. You also want to have a hero who knows how to, you know, have relationships and people in their lives that can be alive and interacting with them. They don't have to just be, like, motives for...
for revenge.
Yeah. Like, I guess I'm saying, you know, tropes can be dangerous because in a lot of ways they're an easy shortcut to a plot. But, you know, if they're done well, they're good. It's all about how it's handled. There are so many, like, valuable stories about people who've lost a loved one, and then that has motivated them to do all kinds of things. The trope itself is not bad, but it's just when it's an offhand thing. Like, I'm babbling now.
No, it was a very good babble, though.
Yeah, well, anyway. I won't be listening back to it, because I'll just be like, shut up, Sarah.
One of the things that's interesting, and I won't mention them, but just in case people haven't read these enormously famous books, but there are a number of books throughout the 19th century where the lead female character, the one we're all going for, the hero of the story, carks it. They just die. They keep dying.
Oh, now
books.
I really want an example.
Like, there's so many books like that. Where, I mean, there's one where someone ends up under a train. Do you?
Oh, well, yeah, okay.
I don't know that one.
Yeah.
Rhymes with...
Oh, it's right there on the shelf. Oh, is that what happens? Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. So, like, but, you know, there's case after case, even in Vanity Fair. I mean, there's great characters who just don't make it. It's like it was almost like a comment on just the impossibility for women to actually break out and every single one of these women is doing something against the run, you know, really going against the way all the crowd around her and all, they're breaking free, they're doing something different. And what do they get for it? Death.
Wow, that's so sad. You keep breaking my mind, John. Like, the other day when you were like, Charles Dickens never wrote any good women, and I'm like, what? Oh my God. Yeah, kind of. Like, I wanted to go online and prove you wrong about that, but I forgot. Remind me.
Okay, I will.
Well, The Great Expectations has got...
We've got Estella.
Yeah. But she's, you know, she's not really fooled. Like, she's always on the edge of things.
Just to finish off, I wanted to ask, who is your literary hero? And that can be an author or a character, but speaking of heroes...
Just one.
Pick one of them. That is always your response to everything. I can't pick one. And, you know, why are they your hero?
Oh, goodness.
Well, I'm going to jump in ahead of John
before
he can pick Anne Elliot, and I'll pick Anne.
Yeah, go, that's fine.
Well, I'll take Anne Elliot's literary husband, Daniel Deronda.
So we've both chosen the kind of quiet strength, moral compass type hero. For all that we love the anti-heroes, you've got to come back to those.
You do. Yeah. Isn't it funny? If people who listen to this podcast week after week know, but probably knew that you were going to say that just like I did. And they probably know.
I could have chosen Jane Eyre.
You could have, but no, I was leaning towards for you, for Anne Elliot. Because my literary hero is not a character, it's an author, and it's J.M. Barrie.
Oh.
Purely just because he brought this amazing story into the world and, you know, just changed the way I look at things. And he literally changed the way I look at the night sky. When I look at the night sky, I don't just see stars, I see, like...
That's powerful.
I think of endless possibilities.
Can I end this on a down note?
Sure.
Yeah, sure, why not? We can rely on you for that.
One of the most... kind of, because it's one of the first novels to really become a blockbuster, absolute blockbuster. It's Clarissa by Samuel Richardson, and it's one of the biggest books ever written, and it is also one of the finest books ever written. Like, the understanding of human nature in this is extraordinary. There's, you know, Fielding and Dr. Johnson Rawl are just like, holy crap. It also has one of the best villains ever, and when you read that book, and you read everything else after it. Mm-hmm. People use that guy, like, and it's been, it's, and you don't even know you are
he's
because
the first
you're using,
one.
He is the guy. You know, in Die Hard, Alan Rickman.
Yeah.
He almost uses words from that book.
Wait, so is Clarissa, which I swear to God, one day I will read.
Yeah.
Is Clarissa is the villain the main character?
Clarissa and Lovelace, they're in a dance of death from word one to word million.
And Lovelace is Alan Rickman?
Yeah.
Cool,
so
okay.
The most highly educated, like, he should know better. He understands humanity so well, and yet he just has a one little gene wrong, you know?
Oh my God.
Everything is friggin' evil. And he is relentless. He is brilliant and awful, utterly awful. And it's like a great warning for people not to get... persuaded by these great con men.
This is the guy to avoid on Tinder.
Smooth talking. Yeah. Exactly. Anyway, so she's a great heroine and she fights so hard and he is horrendous and a great anti-hero.
So is he out to ruin her?
Absolutely.
Oh my God. I'm going to have to read this book. It's just so big.
It is so big.
How many pages?
It's like
it's
this
a million
big.
Words or something.
Whoa.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. That's,
it's really
that's
daunting.
So far down on
I
my
kind
TV,
of wish
honest.
They would like bring it out in little small volumes so
yeah.
I could just
or a TV show.
But it was
so
years,
influential.
I worry about the wrists aching
yeah.
from holding it.
It was so influential that all these other books that we know and love, like Dangerous Liaison, all this sort of stuff, all these books that we love, who have bad guys in it, and who have these heroines. Have just been influenced by this. It's just gone out. And so
I love when you find like the genesis of a stereotype and you realize, this is where it came from. This is who did it first and who did it so well that it echoed throughout generations.
Yeah, and it was the big bestseller. Everyone was reading. If you hadn't read it, you just couldn't, you weren't, people wouldn't talk to you.
Wow. You're on the outs,
right?
You're on the outs, Sarah.
I can't, I've got to do it. It's not that I don't want to. And I'm like, right now, if it was in front of me, I'd be like, okay.
You just stay here and keep reading.
But I will go home and I guarantee you that I'm going to look at it on my shelf and go, oh, that's really big. Maybe later.
You read all of Ken Follett.
I know, but
that's not as big.
Different.
It's enormous. Ken Follett's enormous.
Yeah, he does write bricks. You're right. There's no excuse. I just have to read it. And on the other end of the spectrum, I've got that Bond Trees. Like,
oh yeah,
Bon
George just essay or
maybe
something.
Like 3 years ago.
Francois Sagan. It's like 5 pages long.
I know.
Oh goodness.
I know. Okay, I'll solemnly swear that by the end of what
2030.
Oh no, I'm gonna give myself a month.
Oh good. Okay. Wow. Impressive.
I'll do it in a month. Right, if I say it online and commit myself to it.
Yeah, the podcast listeners have heard you say it now. So someone in a month. Tweet us and be like, has Sarah read it yet?
Hold me to it.
Well, thanks for joining us, everyone, and we'll catch you next Wednesday at 11 a.m.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.